Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for business owners and investors looking to protect their assets, save on taxes, and build their wealth with Michael Bowman, an attorney, author, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
All right. Welcome, everybody. This is Michael Bowman, and this is the Bowman's Business Brief. So today, I'm very excited because I've been trying to get Scott Myers on the phone to, or at least on a podcast or a webinar for a long time now. In fact, I've known about Scott through a mutual friend and always heard great things from clients. And also, I saw him live. And to give you a little background of why I pressed so hard to get Scott on the on a podcast was I was watching him and one of my associates, Chuck Hall, comes up to me and says, "Hey, Michael, this guy is spot on. This guy's legit." So, you know, in the mouth of two or three witnesses, there, I think that's all I needed was, you know, he confirmed my suspicions that, you know, Scott was onto something. And I love the way that Scott has his a different point of view than most of investing gurus. And I don't even think Scott calls himself an investing guru. And so I'd like to welcome Scott Myers to our podcast. Scott?
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. No, thanks for being here. Absolutely. I think that, again, the way you look at things and the way you are, your personality, you really kind of convey that you're into helping people. And if anybody, you know, wants to look at Scott, you can go to selfstorageinvesting.com and you can kind of read his background. And I think you'll get the gist of why I feel the way I do about Scott.
Well, thanks, Michael. I appreciate that. I guess we don't know how to do it any other way. We view our businesses as an opportunity to serve. And at the end of the day, if you're not serving your clients and doing it well, you're either A, not going to be in business very long, or B, you're certainly not going to last any kind of a downturn when everybody and all their flaws are revealed. So yeah, we just continue to do what we do and the only way we know how to do it.
Yeah, no, it's always amazing to me that people still have a scarcity mentality. I have always thought that, you know, you look at there's enough pie for everybody. There's not a limited amount of pie, and we're all in this together. I know that our clients are different types of people than the people just who go to 9 to 5 and get a paycheck, and that's all they really care about. Our people want to make more money and help other people to make more money and diversify. And so it's always good to find another member of our tribe out there, for sure.
Well, agreed, Michael. And once again, I think now is a very, very timely that we're having this conversation. So I'll let you kind of lead the way, and we can go back and forth and give our take on where we're at right now and maybe what to expect.
You know, and that is, at the time, it couldn't have been better. In fact, this sounds weird, but I'm glad that we waited so long, or we just couldn't connect and get our schedules aligned, because, you know, now more than ever, I think that the way you look at things is a way that a lot of people need to start looking at things. There's a lot of people who are going to be, and like you said, I'm stealing your line, Scott, but a lot of people, you know, don't want, you know, who are in real estate, they want to get away from tenants and toilets.
Yep, that's right.
And your mental paradigm shift is a great example for everyone else. I've read your background. I've talked to you a few times. I have followed up with other people about you. I know you. I feel like I'm a little bit of a stalker. Don't get creeped out. It's in a good way. But can you just kind of run through your story and what you saw and kind of your evolution in investing?
I'll try to condense this in terms of what's pertinent now and where we've been, and that is starting out, I guess, like many folks in the real estate business, as somewhat of a hobby, if you will. Started buying single family rental houses to supplement retirement back in 1993, and would fix them up, refinance them, pull a little bit of cash out, and then put a renter in there on usually a lease-to-own program, in hopes that at some point they may buy the property, and if not, then that was okay as well. And continue to do that for several years, and but then realized that, you know what, the gurus that I listened to and the books that I read, if funny you mentioned that earlier, Michael, and that there wasn't as much cash flow and free time as I had anticipated. And so I thought, well, once I do this full-time, I better ramp it up if I truly want to reach those goals. And so once I did become a full-time real estate investor, we started buying apartment complexes. And so we had several apartments here in the central Indiana, where I'm from. Live in Fishers, Indiana, which is right outside of Indianapolis. But all they did was really compound the problem and just magnify that. Now I had almost 450 units in apartments and single family homes. And then came the first downturn that I experienced, and that was during the tech bubble and the recession that followed that in 99 and 2000. And that one was particularly rough on those of us in real estate that had more of a renter model in mind rather than a retail model. So I was a landlord. I had lots of tenants. And in order to get the economy reinvigorated again, the president at that time put out the Community Reinvestment Act, which was the precursor to the 2008 recession, because the Community Reinvestment Act was the act that allowed all these folks that could walk into a bank and who could fog a mirror, essentially get a loan and then roll all their debt and credit into that. And so that occurred for a number of years while we got out of that recession. Well, you know, during that time, immediately, you know, my tenants were leaving and buying homes because that's, you know, who could blame them? It was the best time in history that they could become homeowners. And this act allowed them to go up to 100% loan to value, jam all their credit cards in there, any other debt, school debt, cars, you name it, and the government would back it. Well, then fast forward several years later, all those loans were, you know, bundled up and sent up to Wall Street. And we know what happened during the second one. But
I think a couple of dogs even got some loans for some properties back then.
dogs and dead people and boy, you name it. Yeah. So as we were fighting through that, then, you know, we had rehabbed these homes and spent, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 to rehab them, to make them rent ready. And now we had to go back through and do that again, except spend $10,000 to $15,000 to $20,000 to rehab them to, you know, get the highest after repaired value to now sell them, you know, to take advantage of what was going on. And otherwise, you know, we were destined to go down the toilet. And so no pun intended. So we did. We turned that around and sold all our houses and many of our apartment complexes, and then started getting into self storage and saw the light when I could, you know, buy a self storage facility and have people move their stuff in. And if they don't pay rent, you put a lock on their unit and you sell their stuff off and you recoup your back rent and all your late fees. And there's no tenants, no toilets, no trash, just a metal box on a concrete slab to clean out when we're done. And I thought, where has this Cinderella asset class in real estate been all my life? And at that point, we began selling off then the rest of our apartments and while simultaneously building our portfolio of self-storage facilities. And it was during that time that we endured the second crash in 2008. And fortunately, we were out of apartments at that time and now had self-storage facilities. And I say also another unfortunate event is that we didn't have the cash and we didn't have the equity partners that we do now to be able to take advantage of, you know, what happens in the big land grab that, you know, the savvy real estate investors can make during a recession. Good news is we had self-storage, and there's a rush to self-storage during a recession like we're seeing already. And that is because when we do have a downturn in the economy, people lose their jobs and times are tough. Businesses are tough. And so individuals move back in with their parents or move in with each other, spouses, girlfriends, boyfriends, and then the rest of the stuff, the extra stuff goes into storage until things turn around. Businesses do the same. They sublease their space or maybe give it up for a time frame or close the doors when they put their stuff in storage, inventory and furniture until things turn around again. And so storage, anytime we go through a recession, and the past four, essentially, that storage has really been a business and recognized part of the economy, is really in the top five, almost always been in the top five in terms of sectors of the economy that benefits during a recession. Of course, we all know liquor is always number one. It has been every single recession. No surprise.
Nope.
And then self-storage is always in the top five because we have that perfect storm where businesses and people are downsizing. And at the same time, then the banks are tightening their lending, and they'll still make loans, although at a slow pace on existing real estate, rental real estate that has a historical track record, but new development, speculative development funding just about goes by the wayside. And so we have the perfect storm of huge demand and little supply in the marketplace. And so self-storage always does extremely well during a downturn. And so we're already seeing hints of that. Our storage facilities are leasing up at a good clip. Thankfully, we've got funding in place for the development projects that we have right now. And we've been, you know, certainly, you know, well, every real estate and, you know, investment prognosticator says that they knew this was coming. And well, we've all known it's been coming. It's been 3 years overdue.
But I just had that same conversation with a colleague of mine and saying, you know, everyone knew it was coming. We just didn't know when it was coming. And, you know, we thought, hey, we've had a drunken party for the last decade. We know these things are cycles and, just didn't know it was going to come in the form of a virus.
No, or be, you know, what, once again, like the last one, you know, we thought, wow, that happened quickly. You know, when Lehman Brothers fell, I mean, we all knew it happened. That's, you know, immediately we were thrown into a recession. I mean, the dominoes started falling within days. And we thought, well, we're not an economy that is falsely propped up like the last time. And so, you know, it'll happen, but it should happen a little more gradually. And we were prepared. And certainly we've seen signs of that, you know, in the bond market and, you know, recreational vehicles and other luxury goods sales being down. And, you know, there's been signs in the stock market with the yield curve for a while. But once again, you know, didn't think that we were going to get caught by heading off a cliff, that whereas in a matter of weeks, you know, the entire world economy has been thrown into a recession and deep into it. So here we sit, again, thankful that I'm in self-storage, but once again, navigating some somewhat uncharted waters as this one is. It looks and feels a little bit different this time around.
All right, so I'm going to play, well, this is going to be horrible, but I'm going to play like a dummy, and I'm going to ask you some questions because I talked to some other investors out there, and a lot of people don't know the details of self-storage, and so let's maybe go, we'll do self-storage for dummies for a little bit, and then I've got some other questions here just going through and researching self-storage that I have, and so I'll kind of play just like a layperson, and then you can expand on the topics that I'm asking. The first thing, was it tough to change your mindset of, you know, before you had, you know, doors and tenants and, like you said, toilets to fix and things like that, was it tough to kind of get any information out there about self-storage? And the follow-up to that question is one of the things that caught my ear and that I've verified with, you know, some of your clients is that you like to teach people what not to do because of, and drawing on the mistakes you've made. You know, if people are interested in getting into self-storage, how did you have the mental paradigm shift, and you can take it from there?
Well, we'll handle the first one first, Michael, and that is, you know, how do you get, the difficult message out, or the message out to folks that are, you know, maybe it's falling on deaf ears. And, you know, as I failed to mention along the way in my long bio there that, you know, we do have two businesses essentially, and that is, one is investing, been investing in self-storage since 2005. And then in long about 2008 is when we launched our education company. I used to run a local real estate investor association here in Indianapolis and started teaching workshops. And then it really took off after that by producing home study courses and software and then live events. And so to answer that first question, which is I think what you're asking is, you know, how do we get that information out? And how does that message fall on folks that are perhaps investing or not investing at all in real estate? And, you know, it wasn't easy. I mean, I've been talking about the benefits of self-storage for years. That's kind of the whole basis of our education company, is the top 10 reasons why to invest in self-storage. But, you know, no fault of folks, because I was in that exact same, I guess you can call it a trap, Michael, and that is, you know, I was moving up the real estate ladder. You know, buying houses and then apartments and then, you know, multiple units and more commas and zeros, you know, millions of dollars in real estate. And then we were looking to get into, you know, higher class multifamily and who knows, maybe office buildings. And I did buy an office building and cold storage warehouses. And then when self-storage came along, you know, I thought, oh, you mean them garages? You know, why would I take a step back and want to invest in a bunch of metal boxes on concrete slabs?
Not too glamorous. It's not like right. You know, the fix and flip and you come out with this beautiful product, right? It's it's a little bit less glamorous, a metal door and concrete walls.
Yeah. So, you know, much like the folks that I, you know, even the folks that I talk to now when I still go out and speak in some of these large venues and to large groups of investors, it's just not glamorous. It's just not sexy. And, you know, some people giggle, they, you know, turn away, or, you know, many folks get up and go to the bathroom and never come back. And that's fine because you know what? Yeah, it ain't sexy, but you know what's sexy? And that's cash flow.
Absolutely.
Self storage cash flows. And you know what's even more sexy right now? And that is that this is, I won't say it's recession-proof, but this is the most recession-resistant sector of all real estate, period, bar none. Mm-hmm. And you know, if we were on a webinar, or if I could hop online, invite anybody else out to there to do this after this, go take a look. Historically, you can look back. Just look at recession-proof real estate and up will come self-storage or anything on self-storage during a recession. And you'll see not only articles and narrative, but you'll see the stats. Self-storage does extremely well during a recession. And so that's all I needed to give up my tenants and toilets and then begin teaching people about that, because I can be proud of a beautiful looking self-storage facility that throws off a lot of cash, and it doesn't have to have a whole lot of tenants and toilets and trash in it and beautiful signs out front and fountains and landscaping. I'll save all that money and we'll put it into a bigger boat and more vacations for my family and I.
You know, one of the things you mentioned is that, you know, you go and you teach a non-glamorous subject. And the other thing that I've noticed about you, don't get a big head because of this, because I think you're a humble person and I love that about you, but you have to have a mindset of a teacher and have the passion to be able to teach the subject or just be a teacher, in fact, and have the desire to help other people become as successful as you become. And the proof on you is that you've been in business as long as you have. That says a lot about you, Scott.
Well, that comes from a different place, and that is from the fact that we did almost go under, and that first time around, the first go around in 99-2000, it was at that time when, you know, I was grasping for straws to try to save this business. You know, we used up all our savings, used up our retirement, and then started going to Dave Ramsey classes and yep. All kinds of other financial courses and classes to learn how to turn this thing around. And it was by the grace of God that we were able to do so. And so several years later, I had an opportunity. I began working with and teaching Financial Peace University through Dave Ramsey's organization and our churches. And then the two churches I belong to. And then when he came to town to Indianapolis and held a large event, I had an opportunity to go behind the scenes and have a private one-on-one sit down with him. And not like it was arranged. It was like he was sitting there. And so I went over and sat with him.
Oh, cool. I love when it's organic like that. Yep.
And it was great. And so I just introduced myself and said, hey, guess what? My story is your story, except, you know, thankfully I didn't go bankrupt. I came close, but, and I did lose my house, but, you know, he had a Jaguar that got loaded up on a flatbed trailer and hauled away. And my 69 Corvette got loaded up on a flatbed trailer and hauled away. And marriage is, struggled, and, you know, everything else was a strain, and we went through that. And then I told him about, you know, what happened, what I did and how I came out on the other side of it. And it was a meeting with him in which he's sitting next to me, and then he turns and he starts poking me in the chest and looking me in the eye and says, you need to go out and teach people about self-storage. So because there's a whole lot of folks that call into my radio show and TV show that are attracted to me and my story that are in real estate, and they had that story and your story as well. And they need to hear that there's a different asset class to invest in before they get into that situation that you and I did. So, Michael, it was really a divine calling. This is our mission field and our ministry is to go teach people that there is a better way to do it before they get into trouble like myself and Dave Ramsey and so many millions of other people did.
Yeah. So I guess to maybe get people to start thinking this way, if I said, okay, you know what, Scott, he's making a lot of sense here. What would be my next step?
Well, it's always education. There's, you know, plenty of people that are looking for a quick fix and a good way to make money right now. And, you know, that's why E-Trade stock in E-Trade itself, as well as the services, going through the roof. But
you mean I can't just go ahead and look on Craigslist and find a self-storage area?
Dang, I wish it worked that way.
So do I.
Yeah, there's some education that needs to happen. I mean, a couple ways in terms of looking into self-storage right now. There's always, it can be a passive investor and, you know, become a private equity partner and folks like ourselves that develop these facilities and buy them and then come along for the ride, come alongside of somebody like us. And there's other companies out there that do this. And you can certainly go to Realty Mogul and CrowdStreet and Fundrise and, you know, do a crowdfunding and be a part of that. But if you're active and want to be on the other side and making more money, yeah, it does take some heavy lifting. You need to learn how to value the asset class, and then how to market for and find it. And those both go hand in hand to go out and find a facility. And the multiple ways of finding owners and or creating relationships with the brokers and begin analyzing and then putting together the funding for it. And the funding for self-storage is there because the community banks, savings and loans, credit unions, those banks are still making loans right now, and they will throughout this recession on performing cash flowing assets. and that is self-storage. And self-storage has, because of all those factors, it has the lowest loan default rate of all the other real estate asset classes as well. So those banks, if they want to make money and they're lending right now, they're looking for self-storage facility loans and to partner with you on those, because those are the loans that they want to portfolio and keep in their bank and keep on their balance sheet. So we have no shortage of lending sources and supply of money flowing into self-storage. If folks are willing to learn about the asset class and how to find them and evaluate them, yeah, you'll get it funded.
Is there you said there's not a shortage of money for it, but is there a shortage of available properties? And I say properties because, you know, maybe there's actual existing self-storages for sale or land to put one on there. Have you found any shortage in there?
We did up until about a month ago. You know, this is, once again, now self-storage has come up to Main Street, and folks saw how well it had done during the last two recessions, and that it is, and I don't want to say use the word easy, but just less management, you know, less hand-holding. You don't have to spend as much time operating or overseeing the operations. And so for that reason, when folks could sell during this low interest rate environment and get the most money for their facilities, if they were in a position to, they did. So the low-hanging fruit is gone. Okay. But we just saw an uptick last week, a whole bunch of folks that we work with and our students continue to send direct mailers out. And one of them stated that he had a 22% jump in response rate to their mailings and their cold calling of folks that want to sell. Now, either they're A, you know, they waited long enough and they don't want to lose out now that, you know, their values are high because of the interest rate environment, or B, they don't want to weather the storm. They don't know what's coming with this. And they're scared, and they've got equity in their properties, and they're just like, oh, it's time to get out.
So, you just said something very interesting. You said the people who are doing work, as in sending mailers out, doing calls, putting legwork into it. One of the things that I always tell people is when you're a real estate investor or a business owner, you can't just sit back and wake up in the morning, put your robe on, get your cup of coffee, look at your money trees, and just pick the dollar bills off the trees. You actually have to put work into these type of things. And, it always I get a little disgruntled when I hear people saying, oh, you know, this didn't work out. And, you know, I ask them, well, did you water the tree? Did you fertilize the tree? Did you maintain the tree? They're like, oh, well, no, I thought I was just supposed to get money off the tree every day. And I think that's the biggest thing about investing is you actually have to put some legwork into it.
Gee, that's the biggest thing about everything, isn't it?
Yes.
When I'm teaching our classes, courses, our seminars, you know, I have this slide that I put up. It talks about, it's a picture of Edison. And he said, most people aren't successful because success looks like work and it wears overalls. And I think we have, I truly mean this. And this isn't just a guy now who's over 50 getting out of his soapbox talking like my grandfather did or my great-grandfather and complaining about the generation coming up behind them. However, I don't know if you notice this, Michael, but I see fewer and fewer people that are willing to do the heavy lifting, or at the very least, as Jim Collins calls it, in Good to Great, to get that flywheel turning, you know, to do what it takes to begin the business, to go out there and start the process, and then enjoy, you know, the fruits of it afterwards. And for that, all I see is opportunity, because that just means less competition. If there's fewer people that are out there doing the work, it means that there's more for those of us that do have that, as you mentioned, an abundance mentality. And, you know, we're heading into a time where this is the biggest land grab that we may ever see. Yep. So now is the time to go to work.
I agree. Absolutely. All right. So I got to ask for the listeners out there, how about some tips and tricks getting into this self-storage area?
So, we've been kind of talking about that already, but I think you'll see that the most successful real estate investors are self-storage folks. You know, when they look back and they talk about the greatest mistakes they've ever made, and it's that they didn't start soon enough. And so, you know, it's starting, you know, it's going out and looking at, meeting with some owners, sending out some mailers, getting some mailing lists, talking with the brokers, and just going out and looking for facilities that are available in the marketplace. And then you can begin to, you know, ramp up mailings and to create those opportunities before somebody lists it for sale. Get really, really good at understanding how to evaluate not only the self-storage facility by taking a look at the numbers, you know, a P&L for the last 12 months, taking the income that it brings in, subtracting the expenses, getting to a net operating income, and then putting a factor on that, a cap rate, and putting a value on it, but then also understanding how to value the market. If you want to increase the value, you got to increase rentals or income and all the other ancillary income streams, but you first need to know if you're in a market to do that. Can you raise rates? what's the competition like? Is it oversupplied? Is it undersupplied? Can you market it? You know, some of these mom and pops, they don't even have a website. I mean, just, you know, by the sheer fact of buying it and putting a website on it, you know, may be the thing that is needed to turn these properties around and create that value in them. So I don't want to make it simple, but you know, the simple place is to take it step by step, but, you know, learning about it, just like anything else, not jumping in, not taking a seller or broker's words for the value or the numbers, but, you know, truly digging in and understanding it. And if you've got a basis for investment and putting valuations on commercial real estate, then just learn this asset class and what the various, you know, income items and expense items are in self-storage, and just immerse yourself in the business and then go out and do it.
Yeah. And like in most things in life and in real estate in particular, the instant gratification may not come. You might have to send out some mailers, and then a few months down the line, then you get the person who maybe wants to get out and retire. And since you did the work, they call you up, and then you get your first property.
Yep. We're not in the microwave business. It takes a little bit longer than that. We're in the crock pot business. But once you get the business rolling, it does throw off a lot of passive income. So now is the time to start.
I might steal that from you. I like that. Not the microwave business. I like that. That's fantastic. If someone says, hey, Michael Bowman said we're not in the microwave business, you know what? You can take solace in knowing that came from you. I like that.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect.
To kind of have some fun, and I'm putting you on the spot here, but I used to watch that Storage Wars out there, and you probably just cringe because you know where this is going. But do you have any funny stories about what you found in storage lockers?
Gosh, you know, I'm
sorry to put you on the spot. I never even prepped you for
no,
that. But
no.
I just crack up when I watch that show, or when I watched that show, and I thought, oh, I gotta ask Scott.
Oh yeah, no worries. And you're not the first person who has asked that. And you know, I'd like to say that I do. I'm so removed from that now. You know, that's just at the operator level. We have auctioneers and our managers do that at our sites. From time to time, we do hear some stories about that. But you know, the only ones that really stick in my mind right now, Michael, is one in which it was a facility that that we purchased. And the sellers, two previous owners ago, we have the ability and the right to buy the units as an owner. And the story goes around town in this smaller town is that two previous owners ago, they did buy one of the units, and there was a coin and stamp collection in there. And they bought it, or they received, I don't know how much they paid for it, for the unit. But then they ended up shortly after that selling the self-storage facility, and they built the absolute largest house in town from selling off that coin and stamp collection. So there's one of the positive ones. But that's that, you know, that to go back to your comment about storage wars and auction hunters, I do know several owners in the industry that have had those folks show up on site. And well, let's just say that reality TV may not, it shouldn't be called reality TV all the time.
Don't ruin it for me, Scott. Don't ruin it for me.
I won't. Just a small public service announcement. But, you know, there's I can't see anything comical. I maybe a few disappointments because we're trying to sell the stuff off. And, you know, they did leave, and they just left us some junk in it, or stuff that really isn't treasures. But, gosh, we have been the benefactor and saw somebody who bought a unit full of racing equipment. One of our facilities is over by where the NHRA headquarters are for all the racing teams in Brownsburg, Indiana. And somebody bought one of those units and had literally engines in it and hoods and parts. And they bought it for like a couple $100 and had all kinds of memorabilia and stuff in it. So there are some finds out there. I can't say anything funny. Never found any dead bodies or anything like that. It's just, but it's not, you know, episode after episode like you see on TV.
One of the things that, you know, in researching for this, I ran across how, you know, some people are scared of aggregators and you're not. And why don't you go ahead? This is like a little insider information, but talk about aggregators and then how you feel about them.
So are you talking about aggregators and by way of the marketing? So like square foot in our industry? Yeah. So,
this surprised me because you kind of, you know, people, you know, this may be a challenge to somebody, but then you're looking at it from a different perspective.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple ways of looking at it. First of all, you don't have to use them. I mean, nobody's forcing an owner to use them. And just let me give a little context for the folks that are listening. So an aggregator in self-storage is kind of like the price line, you know, of travel. So an aggregator, there's a few out there, and you would go, when you click on their site, what they do is they they aggregate the self-storage facility owners in a particular market. So if you put in Miami, comma self-storage, and you know below the big guys like Public Storage and Extra Space and CubeSmart, you know, well, usually Next is one of those aggregators because they spend the money to advertise to get up closer to the top. And then what they do is they pool together all the members' money. So we as a self-storage facility owner will pay money to this aggregator to get up there. And then when somebody clicks on that aggregator site, then they'll see my site and a few others that are, you know, close to where that client, potential client, is looking. So they pool the money together. I mean, we can't complain about them, Michael. I mean, we created them. So, you know, we pay to them. We pay them a fee. Sometimes their fees are hefty and it's hard to break away from them for what they do provide. Some folks have had some bad experiences with them, but at the end of the day, nobody's twisting your arm and making you use these folks. We look at the market, we look at our website, our web traffic, the placement. You know, we're doing our level best to spend money to draw people to our site so that we don't have to use the aggregators, but simultaneously also paying money with them to make sure that we're up there as well. So it's a necessary evil, and in some instances it's counterproductive, but you know, hats off to them. You can't, you know, downplay innovation, and you got to pay to play.
Cool. Yeah, it was just one of those things that I love your mentality. I love how you think, and I think that the way you think, a lot more people need to think about and change their perspective on things.
But just tell me the rules of the game, and I'll figure out the best way to play it. That's all I need.
Well, yeah, and then you have the desire to help other people figure out those rules, because yep, there's certain gifts we all have, and if you can take those rules, interpret them, and then help other people navigate them, you know, it's all about karma, right?
Yep.
So self-storageinvesting.com, you know, I've looked at some of the products on there and some of the classes. How long are your live classes for?
So we do a three-day event.
That 3 days on metal sheds.
Yeah, go figure. Yeah. But everybody is well prepared, and we still don't cover everything there is to know about how to find, evaluate, negotiate, purchase, you know, debt structure, capital stack, and then the operation side and manage self-storage facilities along with case studies. So, you know, it's commercial real estate. And so no matter how you slice it, you know, there's a number of pieces that go into building a successful business model. And that's what we teach people in 3 days is how to go about doing that.
I don't know if you're kind of sussing me out on this, but I'm actually asking somewhat on my behalf of some of these questions. Like I looked at the self-storage evaluator. What is that and what does it do?
So the self-storage evaluator is our software. We created this back in 2007, and it's kind of become the standard in our industry. We got an awful lot of folks out there looking at analyzing self-storage facilities that are using our software. And so what this does is it's an underwriting software, much like a banker would have to underwrite a commercial piece of real estate. So it takes in all of the income and shows you the income categories in a self-storage facility, which kind of prompts new folks as to what they need to be looking at and looking for. And then you fill in all of the expense categories. And same thing. It reminds you if the seller or the broker has not included some expense categories, and even guides you as to what some of the industry averages are if they don't, that you need to add in to make sure that you have dotted all your I's and crossed all your T's. And once you come to a net operating income, it'll apply a market cap rate valuation number for you and give you an idea of what the value is, and then a sensitivity analysis that gives you a range of where you should be purchasing this compared to the market. And beyond that, about 150 other different calculations that the bankers, lenders, and private equity partners do want to see. But at the end of the day, you know, there's about four or five that I need to see in order to buy it.
It all goes to keeping you from making costly mistakes, right?
Yeah, because in commercial real estate, those mistakes have more commas and zeros than they do on just a single family home or a stock.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I love it. Again, not a, what are those things called? The infomercials. This is an infomercial. These are actual real questions that I had when I was going through your stuff, and wanted to find out why you had such a great reputation. So I appreciate you answering these questions. Anything else you want to cover?
Oh gosh, you know, just if folks are looking,
3 days worth of stuff, right, Scott? You got.
Well,
like,
yeah.
When you start talking, it's like me and structuring people's real estate and their investments. People ask me one question, it leads to another answer, and that other answer leads to another answer. You know, like people always ask us, how do you guys talk about law and taxes for 3 days? And it's actually quite fun.
My gosh.
Be careful of the questions you start answering, because it just keeps going and going and going, right?
Well, it does. And again, like any business, first of all, you know, real estate is finance. And so, yeah, you could talk for days about finance, and it goes the same for real estate and real estate finance. And so you already give out our website, selfstorageinvesting.com. There's a number of tools and resources for folks that are looking to learn about the business if they want to invest passively or actively. And that's really the end that we're on, is teaching people how to go out and actually do this. And we do have an offering that's going to be coming out most likely later this week, if not early next, that is an online-only version. We do have a home study course that includes tickets to our live event, but we wanted to put a recession-friendly and a, oh my gosh, if you want to call it a pandemic-friendly course to, you know, there's a lot of folks that are interested in storage now that we want to get something in their hands while they're at home, and something that's inexpensive that they want to dip their toe in the water. So just bundling together and putting together all of our online courses and making that available. So I guess keep an eye out, and we'll have that coming across very soon.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, Scott, I really thank you for taking the time to be on this podcast. It took some time to get you on here, and I'm glad I persevered through it. I think that it's another avenue for our clients to make money. And if you guys have questions, you can reach out to Scott and his organization. And if you guys have questions regarding how to structure the self-storage properly, please go to Anderson Advisors. Go to, we have a section there. You can request a consultation, and we can take a look at your situation. When you're doing self-storage, there's a couple different types of businesses, and it's important from a tax-wise and asset protection-wise standpoint to structure it properly. There's no reason to give Uncle Sam a tip and lose all your assets in a lawsuit. So on behalf of Anderson Business Advisors and myself personally, Scott, I really appreciate your time, and I wish you guys the best of success in your investing and everything else you guys do.
Oh, well, Michael, thanks so much. And if I could do the same and return the favor, you know, some of our best allies are your firm and folks like yourself that are doing what you do, because there are many strategies and tactics that we use, as you know, on self-storage. And we have that ability because it's a business and real estate, and, you know, separating the two to protect ourselves from increased property taxes, but then also everything, as you just mentioned, on the asset protection side. And then when we dispose of these, there's so many options in self-storage that isn't available and other asset classes that folks, you do need to contact Michael and his folks. They are definitely allies in this business. So thanks again for having me on.
Absolutely, Scott. And you stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon. Appreciate you.
All right. You too. Take care.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at AndersonAdvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.